Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 295th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Michael Brown and Bright Chase. Thanks, Michael and Bright. I'm Oren Kaplan, and
I'm Carlin Hudson.
Carlin is sitting in for Matt. We'll tell you a little bit more about why in a minute. But today we have my old friend, Devin Kelly, on. She is a writer. She is very funny. She is part of a writing duo with another old friend named Mike Dow. They have written on sitcoms, on TV shows. They have a Netflix animated show out right now called Inside Job. That's a rated R comedy. And they're writing a feature film right now as well, based on a graphic novel. So they've got a lot of cool things happening. Devin and I worked together at Disney many years ago, and she was, you know, I really learned a lot about writing from her and about comedy, and it's fun to catch up with her. And Carlin is also writing a feature, so it's fun to kind of talk about writing for an episode. Now that Matt's out of the way, I get to
get out of here, Matt.
Steal all your secrets. And speaking of Matt, Carlin, you're here because what happened with Matt?
Well, he was in an accident. The accident was called, whoopsie, we had a baby.
Yeah. So thanks, Carlin, for stepping in for Matt. He owes you big time. If you need anything, he told me any favor you need, he will give it to you. But we are going to now move into our conversation with Devin Kelly.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, hey, we are here with Devin Kelly. How's it going, Devin? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
One thing that I thought was kind of interesting to talk about, and Carlin, you probably have something like this in your career too, but
It's interesting to see like the people that you start working with in film, like kind of, you know, your first partners and filmmakers and other people that you team up with. And then I think we've all been, I mean, I think Devin and I are a bit older than Carlin, but we've all been in working in, on this like for a good number of years. And just seeing like who the people from the start like are just kind of superstars now versus who isn't in the business anymore.
Wow, I feel, first of all, attacked. I can't believe you brought me on here to ridicule me and my career. It's a really, really hurtful way to start. Yeah, you do think about that. I mean, we had some random at Take 180. Alison Brie was one of the actors in one of the shows. And that was crazy, like to watch her on TV a lot.
Yeah, like wow. Literally the people from Community like emailed us and they're like, hey, we heard that Alison Brie plays a high school student on your show. We'd like to see that footage. Do you mind sending that to us? And then she did Mad Men too at the same time.
Yeah, she was doing Mad Men at the time. And I was like, you have arrived.
Yeah. But you could tell like that she was a really amazing actor.
I think so. Right? Yeah. I didn't work on that show, but I watched it and I thought, yeah. And she was already working. There's something about the confidence of people who are already working that's like a light shoots out of the top of their head and you're like, oh, okay. I don't know what that is, but the je ne sais quoi.
Do you find that's true about writers also?
Yeah, I think so. Probably a little bit. Right. We're a little bit weirder, wouldn't you say, Carlin?
Yeah, I went to acting school at Tisch, and it's been kind of fun to see like a person in my class, which is only 60 people, is Chloe Fineman SNL now.
Cool.
Which is wild. Yeah. And then another one of my classmates, who's a good friend of mine, Stacey Osakafor, she's writing, she won an Emmy for Watchmen. Like she's writing the new Blade movie. She's like a big writer now too. And so, yeah, it's been kind of cool. And then there's many people who have their PhDs, obviously, and other things. But
which are also very cool. One of my friends from film school is on NPR, you guys.
Oh, really?
That is kind of cool.
Ira Glass.
Elena Shotkin. Oh. She's the food editor and freelance editor for the LAS and KPCC newsroom. So sometimes I'll be driving and listening to the radio when she comes on.
That's awesome.
And but it's don't so you exciting.
Get, who shot your, who's the DP on your thesis film?
Lance Black, Dustin Lance Black, who won an Oscar for Milk. He was a really good DP in film school. He was known as a director of photography. And he took amazing pictures. He shot tons of people's student films. And then he got a job on Big Love on HBO. And then he wrote Milk. And then he won an Oscar. That was so crazy. Yeah.
He wrote Milk?
Yeah. And then won an Oscar for it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But so wasn't it, and I think we were making like web videos about, you know, dogs farting and like making our dads do impersonations or impressions of people from movies at the same time that your classmate was winning an Oscar. Did that?
Like, was he winning at the same time? Yeah, I think that's when I was like doing Kesha impressions and dressing up like a Yeti.
Do you think Kesha can sue TikTok? Isn't that like her term?
Oh boy.
Oh yeah, TikTok. Yeah, she had that song. Yeah, she good point, Oren.
She didn't think of the word TikTok. Like it's a clock sound.
It wasn't before Kesha.
Okay.
That's true. She made it catchy.
I think about it today. I guess I brought it up because today I posted some things from this commercial I just did on Instagram, you know, some like breakdowns and little behind the scenes videos. And it was like a really low budget commercial, you know? Like I basically did, you know, we had a production team. I had like a great DP and production company and stuff, but I did all the editing and visual effects and color and sound myself. And I, you know, kind of wrote the script. They gave us an idea, the company, and we had to do everything super cheap. Like we had this shot of the lead actress. She like falls through the ceiling to the ground. And we couldn't have put her on wires or anything. Like she literally just had to jump and, you know, land. And I post this and I know like some of the people that we worked with, like are working on like $100 million movies. And like, I sometimes wonder, like, if they see me being proud of this, like, tiny video and they're, like, best friends with, you know, Kristen Stewart or whatever on a yacht making deep, you know,
If you make any money, like, doing what we do, I feel like you've made it. I mean, think about where all of us were. I mean, sometimes I think about like the first meeting I had on the Disney lot and I just thought, I looked up and saw those dumb dwarves or whatever, you know, is on that lot. And I was
only one of them is dumb.
That's true. But there's all, you know, it's just, and you just think, holy shit, like, I can't believe I'm here. And I can't believe I'm taking these meetings. It is crazy that we're all doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think anything, like, people ask that about being a writer. There's no mystique to it whatsoever. Do you write stuff? Then you're a writer.
I thought you were asking me. I was like, yeah, sometimes.
Do you? Well, then, Carlin, you are a writer.
I did just join the WGA, so that was exciting.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's
a really big deal. Welcome to really good healthcare.
I can't wait. I don't get it till January, which is crazy. It's like 6 months later, but whatever.
Yeah, they make you wait. They make you wait and like accumulate points and stuff, but it is fantastic.
I can't wait.
Do you have to get paid a certain amount of money to keep it?
Yes.
You have to make over $40,000, I think, to qualify, and then every year you have to make $40,000.
Yep, it just went up, I think, to 40.
So if you're like a feature writer, sorry to interrupt. If you're like a feature writer, do you have to write a feature like every year, pretty much, to keep your health insurance?
Maybe, but like, maybe, but like the contract I'm under is a step deal. I'm writing a feature for Netflix, Devin, and
very cool.
Depends on the day. But yes, it is cool.
What about the dwarf? What you just
okay,
said,
look,
you need it.
Look, I know, but wasn't talking about me. I was talking about y'all. but like, it kind of depends, I guess. Yeah, it just depends on how many steps they continue to give me past my, like, I'm only owed them a first draft and a second draft, but there's all these other steps that I could be paid for. So it's like, maybe next year they'll pay me for another step and then I'll qualify. For the health insurance.
Oh, for the health insurance.
Yeah, or yeah. Maybe not. Maybe I could do like 4 weeklies or something. You know, I don't know.
I mean, it's so insane. Devin, aren't you worried that in like 20 years from now, you're not going to be like hustling to write and you'll lose your health insurance and then you'll be like older and stuff?
Yes, I worry about it every single day. In fact, my writing partner, Mike, and I have a writing partner, Mike Dow, and we take jobs and think about, we strategize. He has a baby. I have 2 kids.
Oh my goodness.
We have families.
How old is his baby?
He's 16 months. No, no, he's 17 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's a cute crazy baby. Oh my God. Meeting. Yeah. You guys have to have a baby play date.
Yeah, Mike is our boss at Disney. Devin and my boss at Disney. Well, it's weird. He started as an editor there. And then one day they're like, by the way, Mike's your new boss.
Yeah, that's the world of internet upstarts. You know, it's like one day he's the editor and the next day he's an executive. Yeah. Quite literally, that's what happened. But yeah, no, we strategize our whole lives around like we had to, like when we worked on Inside Job, which is a Netflix show, mm-hmm. that was Animation Guild. And that took a year.
And that's different, right? That's like a different guild.
Yes. It's a different guild. It's like IATSE kind of thing. Yeah. It's the same insurance, but it's a different guild. So it's a whole different thing. And so we took that job and animation takes so long to complete. We worked on that job for 1 year and we had to think about, are we going to take this job versus we got offered like a multicam sitcom at the same time that was Writers Guild. And we were like, okay, let's look at how many points we have saved up. We each had enough points to get us through a year of not working on a WGA show.
Wow.
So we burned through our points. It's all like, I mean, this is what.
Right. This is the art
this is
of.
This is the glamorous life of a TV writer.
And
you're thinking about that.
And since you have a writing partner, you have to split all your fees. Well, maybe not when you're at your level, maybe, but like at lower level, you have to split your fees too, right?
Oh, no. We split everything. We split everything.
But at do you split the points too?
Oh, no. No, you don't have to split your points in the guild or anything. But you make half, so you have to have a different, you have to have
double
better
the work
jobs
almost.
To make, yeah, it's double the work. Yeah. But then it's easier to write. It's a whole thing. It's a whole calculation that goes into that.
I do think, I always like fantasize about having like a directing partner, like being in a duo. And I've actually mm-hmm. lose a lot of jobs to duos, which I totally understand. If I was-
Wait, hiring, and you have brothers.
I know.
Yeah, but
brothers all the duos are brothers.
I don't know any sisters,
the
by the way.
Brothers.
I know. Where are the sister teams?
That's a great question, and I think about it a lot and get real pissed.
Are there sister duos? Yeah, we're supposed to have. Well,
I don't know any.
Well, maybe you're not looking and on the right Vimeo channels. We were supposed to have these sisters, the Ray sisters. They're a directing duo on the podcast, and they were too busy to come on. So, hey.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Seems like
great.
Directing, female directing duos are hot right now.
Damn. But, okay. The one.
No, but
hot.
I just think about like.
Glad to hear it.
Treatments and pitching, and you know, before we started recording, you talked about how much free work we do. You know, I think both writing and directing, you're constantly trying to convince someone that you're the exact right person to hire out of a, you know, a list of like super talented people. And because that's such a grind, and you're trying to make money and also pitch and work on bigger things and work on your own projects, like if you have someone that's covering for you, that's like, hey, I have, you know, my kid's going to the hospital today. Like, can you please write the end of this treatment that's due tonight? Like, you can't do that if you're alone. But if you're a duo,
no,
you get to cover.
Which sounds really hard. Yeah, no, divide and conquer is our motto. Like, we break stuff together, and then we write outlines together and stuff, and then we start basically splitting scenes and that sort of thing, and then we put it all together and go through it together. Make changes.
Can you tell me, I think we have a range of listeners from Hollywood vets to people that, you know, didn't even know there's such a job as a director. Can you just explain
to my dad? Maybe my dad will listen. You might have just picked up one more fan.
Yes, yeah, so we actually have kind of a few really high quality dads that listen to this podcast. Like previous guests, but the guests don't listen, but the dads do. Mr. Yacenda, talking to you.
Aww.
But so what does breaking a story mean? Especially like you do primarily TV writing. I know you're working on a feature now, but most of the last 10 years you've been writing for TV. What does breaking mean? And does it apply to features also?
Yeah. I mean, I think it does. You can probably speak more to that, Carlin, but we have spent, you know, weeks and weeks figuring out the story. I mean, you have to have a story. This is what I didn't know when I was just diddling around with fucking God knows what screenplays starting in my like 20s, when I was like working at the Cheesecake Factory by night and then writing screenplays by later night. You know, I was just like so stupid in my apartment, just being like, sit down and then just write. Like it comes in your head and just bleh, like ticky-tacky, wrong. No, not a good plan. You do not run into a forest without a map. And writing without an outline, a treatment, a completely thorough idea of where you're going is like running into the woods naked without a map. I added that naked part.
Naked,
I'm like, for sex appeal. I know you really are trying to get this, keep this podcast sexy. So you're nude in the woods, alone in the dark. You don't have a map.
Honestly, that is hot. That sounds very sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alone. You,
not it's unlike alone. My last, yeah. My past weekend in Big Bear.
Oh, nice.
Exactly. Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
dad alone in the woods.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, yeah. So you have to sit there.
Wait, and so breaking like, means figuring out the plot, the structure.
Breaking means figuring out the story. Break a story, and it's fucking difficult.
Like making an outline. Does that count as breaking something?
Well, yeah. An outline is what happens after you break the story and write down everything that happens. Then you go through it and you write down basically a little like beat sheet, which is the abridged version of what happens. And then you take, after you kick the tires on that, then you write the outline based on the beat sheet. And then you can send off the writers to write the script, which is, it's truly, I'm not exaggerating when I say that writing, the actual act of writing dialogue and, you know, interior, the chapel night is like, sprinkling little sprinkles on the top of a cake that took you 32 hours to bake. Like, it's like, that's the very last and the really the only fun part. I don't want to speak for all writers, but that's the fun part. That's your reward for doing the brutal, pedestrian, yucky grunt work of trying to beat out the story.
And that's the same for TV, because I do that in features too. Like, I feel like I'll spend at least half the time outlining, if not more. And in TV, it's almost more, right? Like, you could do, if it's a 20-week room, you might spend 15 weeks breaking the store. I don't know. Is that the right math? How does that work?
I don't know exactly. I mean, you have to have time to send writers off to write drafts and stuff like that. But absolutely, it's a room full of people sitting there. And it is not very fun. I have to tell you guys right now. I'm sorry, but it's not. I mean, maybe someone likes that. It is difficult. And it's a lot of people trying really hard to work together to make something good. You know, in a collaborative, it's a team of people in a room.
But that sounds fun.
In the room. Okay. Can I just tell you something? Okay. Yeah. Here's what I want to say about TV writing. They have turned this thing, they call it the room. Who's in the room today? Like it's literally like the room where it happens from
Hamilton. I've seen Hamilton. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's that like the room. And I was like, please stop calling it the room and like luring people to this sexy sounding career of TV writing. Call it a room. That's what it is. That will give people a better idea. Do you want to go in a room and work on a story? And you're like, let me think about it. Right. But if they're like, do you want to go in the room? You're like, ooh, who gets to be in the room? Oh, who's in the room? Oh, tell me. Oh my God. Do I get to be in the room? It's like, ugh.
Well, because it's like, I mean, it's like, just like Hamilton, it's like a room of insiders. Like, how do you get inside that room? How do you get chosen from a million people? And just to back up a little bit, you were talking about how like writing dialogue is just like the fun, the sprinkles on top of the cake, on top of the icing.
The story cake, yeah.
But I feel like, you know, to me, I actually haven't read a ton of Carlin's writing, but I've read a ton of Devin's writing. So that's, I'm just qualifying why I'm saying this about Devin, but like I've read so much of your stuff and it's like, so A, it's so funny. B, it's like so easy to read. And it's like, I could tell you like a guy walks into a room, you know, passes gas, pretends it's on him and leaves the room. And you would write like the funniest version of that scene, you know, like in 2 minutes. I remember when we worked together at Take 180, which was owned by Disney at some point, you know, you would just like go off for like half an hour and type things up and bring them back and then be super funny. And even when we did, so Devin actually like wrote the like a lot of the Quiznos stuff I did. Like it was her idea to do House of Thrones, which was a House of Cards and meets Game of Thrones thing, because we knew this guy that was an amazing Kevin Spacey impersonator back when it was
Kevin Spacey got canceled. Yeah. Kevin Spacey got canceled. I don't know. Did Ross Marquand get canceled? No, he's okay.
No, he's like doing so well. He's
he is.
He's in like Marvel movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Actor guy we knew. But like, I think the reason you're not worried about that stuff is it comes easy to you. And I suspect that the way you even got your job at Disney to begin with was because of that skill of like writing scripts, like 3-page scripts that are really fun to read, you know?
Oh, right. Well, that's kind of like weirdly like baking and frosting the cake and throwing the sprinkles in at the same time. Like we had to do, the website we worked for was called Take 180. So everything had to be 180 seconds. And it was kind of for kids like that. And so everything was 3 minutes. So that was actually easy-ish and fun too at the same time. And we got, it was just silly parody stuff. It was a little bit sillier. There wasn't the same, and you're already working from, when you're doing a parody, you're already working from.
Yeah.
A place that's established, right?
The structure and like the game are really clear. And that's what takes so long to figure, at least in my experience, to figure out the outline is like, what is the structure of this thing? Like, what's the frame of the house?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like, I mean, I obviously do not write as nearly as much as you guys do, but I feel like when I do write, the structure, not that it's easy for me, but it's the stuff that I really enjoy. And the dialogue is where I'm like, oh, this doesn't sound good. We'll fix this later. We'll fix this later. We'll fix this later. And then like every line of dialogue is like not great, you know? And I'm like, I don't want to give anyone the script to read because even though, you know, I think the story is good, all the characters sound the same, you know? And it's at some point the dialogue being good makes the story good. You know, like those things are correlated to each other, right? Because it's the dialogue is kind of defining the people and their motivations and stuff in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it does matter.
Especially
you don't want it
in,
to
like,
be
multicam and stuff.
Yeah. You don't want it to be just kind of loxy, which means lay there like a lox.
Yeah, I was like, what is that? Like a bagel?
That's a writing term?
It's a term. It's a term. I don't know. See, the funny thing about all the TV writing terms is like some things are built upon each other, like lore that you've heard about some writing room that like four people ago knew someone that was in this room and then the showrunner would say this and then now everybody says it. But Loxy is a term that, I don't know, one of the writing rooms we were in, they used to say that a lot. Like it's Loxy, meaning it lays there like a lox.
Like the
bagels
salmon?
And lox. Just like, bleh.
Yeah.
It's just bleh. It's just right there.
Interesting.
So that's something we say a lot.
Yeah. Carlin, do you
we
find...
mean...
Right. Do you find that you have... Do you enjoy writing the dialogue like more... Like, are you kind of like Devin? Like, that's the part that comes
easy
and breaking the story is hard?
It is more fun. I think the thing I get more practiced at is just letting myself like go with dialogue and scenes, knowing that I'll go back and trim it later. I think like I used to get in the weeds more when I was editing at the same time that I was writing. And so now sometimes I just kind of like vomit it all out and then shape the scene kind of after that. But I have to know what the scene, like if I don't know what the scene needs to happen in the scene, like who wants what. What happens at the end of the scene? Like, I'm not, then I won't write the scene.
Exactly.
It's pointless.
Exactly. You still have to know their drive. What's their drive? What's their attitude? All that stuff is stuff we talk about a lot in advance. And you have to know your characters really well to be able to do that. So figuring out the characters, like you're saying, Oren, that comes earlier too. And then sometimes you find little fun quirks as you go along, but.
Right. Well, I guess I'm curious, like, I'm fixating on this breaking the story thing. So like, so Devin, the movie you and Mike are working on is based on existing IP, right? It's based on a graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And so you have, or you read the graphic novel and then you come and you say that this is how we would make this into a movie.
Yeah. We kind of came up with a story based on the graphic novel because the graphic novel was released tiny, tiny bit by tiny bit. I want to say there were only like six little squares of cartoon. Oh God, this is not the actual term. Sorry, graphic novelists. That's not the terminology. How did we ever get this job? Six little squares. But that was it. Like sometimes that was it at a time. So what we really tried to do was take the spirit of the graphic novel, you know, and then build a story out of that. So we took some of the characters, some of the basic premise, and then we've now been working for months just on the story to make it work.
But so how much do you need? So you won this job, right? You were competing against other writers to get this job. How much of the story do you break before you go pitch your version? Like how much of the free work are you doing?
Yeah, you tell them the entire idea that you have and just cross your fingers and hope they pick you, basically.
So you guys are
just... I have to say, though, after... So you think you're telling them the entire movie and then you go to write
exactly
what you told them and you're like, holy shit, there's like a giant cavern in the middle of this thing. How do they get from A to B?
And your reps are like, you've already done the work. This will be easy. Like, and you're like, no. But yeah, I mean, my pitch to win this job was 30 minutes. It was at least 12, 14 pages, you know, just like many, many act one, act two, act three characters, themes. Like it was long. It was exhaustive.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. You have to do that. Yeah. Otherwise you sound like a donkey.
Yeah.
Do you guys know? I mean, I feel like Carlin, yours is a little different because it's an original script, right?
No, it's an adaptation of a book.
Did someone option it? How did it come to be?
Yeah, kind of similar. Two companies optioned it, sold it to Netflix, and then they were looking for writers to pitch on it. And it needed to be kind of a specific demo, or they wanted a specific, because it's like a queer story. It's set in the South. It's funny. It's YA. So I don't know, maybe there's hundreds of us in that sandbox, no idea. But it was kind of, I had a different script. The other high school movie I'm packaging that they read, which is how I got in the room. But I'm pretty sure they went out to like 10 or 12 writers. And
that's a lot. They're not supposed to do that.
I made that number up. No, they're not supposed to do that.
They're not supposed to do that many.
How many are they supposed to do?
I think they're supposed to narrow it down to like 4 at the most.
Wait, really?
There's a rule?
Maybe 3 to 6. Maybe 3 to 6. I think it's considered, you have to get a producer on here and ask.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it is considered bad form to ask 20 people to pour their soul into a pitch for a full treatment, basically a full like movie pitch, and then not pick them.
This, my first meeting was kind of like, just see if you're interested. Like, how did you like the book?
Oh, yeah, you're right. You know what? You're right. Sorry. I forgot about that stuff.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So then, how are you? Are you cool? Are you like a normal person?
Yes. Yeah. And like, do you have any sort of top level thoughts, you know, about it? And then it kind of was whittled from there. And then at the end, it was like, I think Netflix heard 3 pitches, like full pitches.
That's right. Yes, that's correct. Yes, absolutely. I forgot. See? Things.
But even to be honest, since it was my, that's not true. This is my third like open writing assignment pitch, which is like Hollywood's, it's kind of self-explanatory, but it's basically IP or an idea or whatever. Yeah. That is funded. Yeah. That they're like paying for. It's not independent. It's you will get paid for this. It'll be WGA. And so I think it was like my third time pitching on an open writing assignment, but I honestly, even that first meeting, like I came in with a mini pitch and they were like, whoa, you know?
Yes.
And I got the job.
That's a good idea. That is a great idea.
Yeah.
Don't say six squares. Just say, I read the book.
Yeah, exactly. 6 squares. Yeah. Guys, 6 squares and I sold you right in the room. No, but it's you're right. It's better at least to show in what ways you connect to the material.
Yeah.
To say like, I was really inspired by this. This reminded me of the time I was at camp as a kid or whatever it is that really draws you into the material and makes you want to write it. That stands out too. I think enthusiasm goes a long way.
Yeah. It's a different order of magnitude budget wise, but in commercials, it's like the same thing. Like,
totally,
you're supposed to, you always have this meeting, the first meeting you have with the agency, or you know, in any version where you're meeting with like the person that needs to decide whether they'll hire you or not. And those meetings are always set up as them, they're going to tell you about the project a little bit. And I think the first couple of times, you're like, oh, cool, yeah, I'll listen, you know, and then you realize like after the first 2 meetings where they have zero interest in you that like, oh, them telling you about the project is actually about you reacting to them telling you about the project. So you better be ready.
You better fucking say you love Quiznos or you are not getting this job.
You better be eating a turkey toasted
enter eating a sub. Just throw it right in their face. Yeah, exactly. No, it's very true. And that's true of lots of general meetings, like anything, it's your chance to tell them when they say like, so are you working on anything now? You have to whip out that thing you're really interested in doing. Yeah.
And so Devin, for your thing, I think it's interesting because you didn't get like a plot or we're going to do this issue or whatever. You just kind of had this world. What's the first step? Do you guys like stand at a whiteboard and like look in like some text document or like notes file on your phone and you're like, hey, I thought it'd be fun to do a story about vulnerability of whatever of men.
I don't mean to laugh at that, but I love that.
Like how do you even start finding your angle on something, you know?
Right. That's a great question. Well, for this project, it was already 2 genres put in, baked into it. So that was a whole first step for us. And so like they always say, like writing 2 horses, you should not do that in scenes and stuff. Well, this was writing 2 genres and that was already a challenge. I would like to say that Mike and I bought a whiteboard and my children use it to draw on it with their dry erase markers. We don't do cards on a wall. We don't do that. Yours, they look so cool. It looks like to me, I'm like, that's what a real writer does.
I also have a whiteboard too.
Do you use it? Yeah, let's see it.
And it's small-ish.
I know. Well, there it is. It's right. It's just sitting on top of my chair right now.
Oh, that's cool.
But,
yeah.
But see? That's like, I had
stole
to
your movie idea. Sorry. Yeah,
right
off of there.
Click, screen grab.
But like that right now on my whiteboard, yesterday I put up, I have to kind of re-break one of the B story in the Netflix movie. So I was like, you know, so I went through and like rebroke the B story and that's that. Of course, yeah, now I'm like, where I'm like, nobody touch it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Your dog knocks it over. Yeah.
Your dog walks over by it. Yeah. Because that will come off on pet fur.
Oh, yeah.
Dry erase marker. I do notes in my phone a lot, like little inspo bits in my phone, just free thoughts, random, like shower thoughts.
And do you remember to go back and find them and read them?
Yeah, because I call it, like I'll call it the title of whatever it is, and I'll just put ideas. The thing that sucks is to go back in your phone and see ideas for jobs you didn't get.
Oh, I know.
And you're like, all these stories for I'm sorry. Okay, let's delete that.
Yeah.
I don't delete it because maybe I'll use it for something else.
You never
Whenever
know.
I work on a treatment, I use, you know, I add the folder to like my finder's quick bar, you know, the dock on the left, so I can quickly get to the folder. And then, you know, whenever I don't get a job and I see it's still there, like, you know, oh, this is the Coca-Cola job or whatever. And it's just on my screen at all times. It makes me really
taunting
depressing.
You. Exactly. No,
that's
it is
when I get a new computer.
Yep. Perfect.
There you go.
Perfect.
That's the
Mike
solution.
And we did try starting using, because we use Google Docs to share a lot, because you can share
like
them quite easily. And then we talk over Zoom. We are rarely in a room. Notice I didn't say the room. We're rarely in a room together because we're busy and we don't live in the same part of Los Angeles, which is like you might as well live in two different states. So we just get on there and we did at one point in our Google Doc, we do like, there's a way to do note cards in that. And then you can shuffle stuff around and you can
really?
Even add colors. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You can totally do that.
I did not know that.
In Google Docs. Yeah. It's not designed for that. You have to find something else that says note cards or something. I forget what it's under, but it's somewhere in there if you ever are collabing with someone. Our friends, by the way, love, these are two writers we worked with, Brophy and Miles. They have a friend who invented something called Writer Duet, which is so much better. Can we take a moment to just say how terrible Final Draft is?
It is terrible.
Do people come on and talk about that a lot? Have writers ever come on and complained?
There's another podcast that their main premise of their podcast is how bad Final Draft
no
is.
Kidding.
It's so fucking bad. It's so unuser friendly. It drives us insane.
Do you use Writer Duet?
Okay. We started using it for a brief second on Inside Job, but we need to take the time to fully learn it. Once you do learn it, it's a much more intuitive program. It is so infinitely superior to Final Draft, but we have to sit down one day or 2 days or a week and like really learn it. And we both have to learn it. That's the thing.
Do.
It can't just be me at midnight tinkering around and then just, you know what I mean? Like
Like Highland. That's what I use now.
Yeah. I use Highland too.
Yeah.
Oh, Highland? Really? Mm-hmm. Is it good? I haven't used it.
It has a couple features that I don't love, but there's more that I love. But I think Final Draft has more features that are annoying than Highland.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sucks.
And you can export to Final Draft from Highland.
Oh, you can. See, that's really good. And to PDF, I assume, and all that stuff.
No, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I'll have to look into that. Is it easy to learn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Writer Duet's almost so good that it's hard. It is easy to learn, but it's like it has so many good features that to really use it well, you have to spend some time.
Yeah, Highland is really easy to use. It's pretty intuitive, but there's a few, you'll find yourself like doing tab a lot, which you don't do tab on Highland. So that like breaking the habit of hitting tab for all the characters' names, because you just write it, anything you put in all caps at the beginning of a sentence is a character name, and then it automatically puts it in the middle, and then you, so it's just sort of a different, you know.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
cool.
A little different. The premise is that like it kind of takes away the worry of the formatting and just like you only have like kind of text on the screen. But
oh, that's cool.
Wait, so when you guys are outlining your story, does one of you have like the, you know, the outline like bullet points and the other one is just kind of talking, or are you guys both just editing?
We both have the document open. Once in a while, we'll say like we've already kind of come up with a broad stroke. So you take act one, I'll take act two, and then we'll come together and then we'll both do act three. We do that sometimes. Mike is really, really okay. So here's another thing. Mike took a writing class from this guy named Corey Mandel.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of him? Mm-hmm. Is he been? Yeah. Okay. So people really like Corey Mandel. He talks about there's two types of writers, conceptual and intuitive. And Mike is very conceptual and I'm very intuitive. And we've kind of come together over the years and kind of gotten strong in the other person's area. But Mike is really, really good at outlines. So sometimes he'll be like, I just need to take this and do this thing that does, you know, in this figure, and then we'll figure it out later. Like we'll fix it in a second, but let me just hammer this out as I see it from a very conceptual viewpoint. So a lot of times he's doing that and we zhuzh it together. You know, there's many different things we do.
Have you heard of him? Corey Mandel, Carlin?
No.
Oh yeah. So I didn't take his class, but my friend took it and she told me kind of everything about it. And he talks about the forest and the trees, right? Like there's people that kind of have a good view of the whole thing, you know, the conceptual people, they're really good at structure. They're really good at breaking into act two, act three, like kind of have an instinct for that. And then there's people that are really good at just like writing dialogue, like just barfing things out, like being emotional, like kind of finding, like drawing from their life and putting it into the stuff that's happened and just kind of being really insightful. And I think he says that the problem is a lot of writers, if you're really intuitive, you work on your intuitive side a lot. And if you're really conceptual, you work on your conceptual side a lot. So conceptual people just keep structuring, they'll write outlines and outlines and outlines, but they don't really want to write the script because, you know, that like they don't want to get to the intuitive side. And then the intuitive people will like journal and write great scenes and write great dialogue, but they don't really want to like do the conceptual side. Like,
yeah, they're figuring like structure out how barf. Everything
fits together.
Yeah.
And his whole thing when you take his class is like, whatever you're good at, like if you're a conceptual writer, he just makes you do intuitive stuff like all the time. And if you're an intuitive writer, just do conceptual stuff all the time, because he's trying to break that like your crutch basically, and trying to force you. He's like, you're already really good at this writing dialogue and being emotional and doing whatever this thing, you're intuitive, like kind of tapping into the rhythm of these things, but your stuff doesn't build to anything or whatever. So all you, don't worry about this and just worry about working conceptually or vice versa. And it's
exactly. And
very smart.
Something interesting is a lot of times conceptual and intuitive writers don't get along. Like you'll be in a room and the conceptual writers, you'll pitch something and the conceptual writer will be like, explain that to me, start to finish and convince me with logic why he should drop his pants and moon her. And you're like, I don't fucking have an explanation for you, dude. It's funny. That's the explanation, you know? And so usually they kind of argue a lot, but Mike and I seem to have figured out like how to make that work.
That seems that ideal though, to have the kind of for two, if you're going to be a writing team, for one to be more conceptual and one to be more intuitive.
Well, it is, and especially when you have to have both, you really have to have, that you really appreciate that in the other person. You really, really do.
But you're really good at conceptual writing, and Mike's really good at intuitive writing too. But yeah, I think maybe there's...
Wrong. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, over the years, we have built it up over the years of just working together. And also just, you have to. You just have to, especially if you're a comedy writer, like you have to be able to make jokes and think of funny crap. And then you always have to have structure.
Yeah. Well, how can you talk a little bit about comedy in structure? Like, do you think when you're breaking the story before there's dialogue, before there's, you're kind of setting the scene, how funny does the story need to be when you're writing like a comedy feature?
The story itself? That's a great question.
Like, does the premise have to be funny, or do you think you can just make scenes funny on their own?
I think that the funny part usually comes in the the intuitive places. Like, you can do the same exact scene two ways, and if you focus on one little detail, it's suddenly funny, you know? So I feel like that comes later. The structure always has to be there. Someone said, I did not make this up. Maybe someone can tell me who actually came up with this quote, that confusion is the death of comedy. And so you absolutely have to make something, has to make sense before you try to put your like sparkle magic on it. Like, it has to make sense. You still have to do that structural grunt work and know what everybody's drive is. Even if it's a silly drive, you know?
I will say, I think that when you're writing a comedy feature, a funny premise is key. Because if the premise doesn't have any comedic potential, then that's going to be hard to make it a comedy. You know,
that's
what I mean?
That's a good point. Like, he dies of cancer.
Yeah, that's not funny, like, right?
That's not. Right. That's not funny.
I mean, what's his name?
Roberto Unless Benigni? It's farting cancer. What?
He made the Holocaust comedy, Life is Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Roberto Benigni.
Yeah.
Is that who that is? Did I say the right name? Sometimes names.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The guy that like climbed over the chairs to get his Oscar.
Yeah, he climbed on the furniture and jumped up at Oscar at the Oscars, and then was never heard from again.
Yeah,
that was weird.
Oh man, I watched that with I think I watched that with my grandma and her friend who's like a Holocaust survivor that like walked out in the middle of the movie. It's a comedy about the Holocaust. If you haven't seen it,
because he was making light of it.
Yeah, it's really good, Carlin.
There was a lot of tragedy.
At the time, it was really good. Yeah.
It was. It's like a critically acclaimed film,
An Oscar winning
It won
comedy.
The Oscar.
Whoa.
In 1990, 2002?
Yeah, probably something like that.
1990, 2002. It's the future. It's the future Oscar winner.
You can quote me on that.
But, I mean, you think about a movie like Tootsie, right? Or Mrs. Doubtfire, I guess. It's
those are funny premises. Like, that premise is funny.
Right. But then you think about a movie like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where the premise isn't that funny. It's just this guy's ditching school, and he's doing a bunch of funny things. And because they are
funny things.
Lying to...
You just said it, Orin. You just said it.
But because they're lying to their parents, there's, like, comedy, you know?
Yeah.
Or even, like, Back to the Future. Like, I don't know that premise... Is well, I guess
dating his mom.
Yes, I guess if the premise is like, oh, you accidentally broke up your parents in the past, and you need to get them to fall for each other, or else you'll never be born. That's
right,
funny.
But does anyone ever say Back to the Future, one of the great comedies of all time?
Yes, there are some nerds online. Who
I'm sure. Yeah, no offense, nerds.
The same people who tanked the all-female Ghostbusters Rotten Tomatoes score might. Say that.
God damn them. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, how do you, Devin, how do you know what's funny? Like when you're either writing in a TV room on like a sitcom, like a multicam comedy, or you're writing, is the Netflix, the animated show, is that a comedy? I mean, I know it's like very adult.
Yeah. It's very funny. I mean, there's a lot of jokes in it.
So it's like a rated R comedy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
How do you determine if a joke is funny?
Oh, you were asking if this was funny. Yeah, you were asking if this project is funny. And it's more it's because it's based again on IP. We're kind of following the tone-ish of the IP, which is there's funny moments, but the funny comes from like real character stuff and you know what's actually happening with the plot. But I always feel like there's a really missed opportunity in a lot of movies, which is to do what people would really do in that situation and what people would really say in that situation. Because the movies spend so much time trying to make heroes and action and this and that. And it's like, you know, if really an asteroid came down to Earth, like people would act, there'd be some funny moments, some funny reactions of people, you know.
Do you and Mike ever think something's like not like, does he pitch something and you're like, yeah, it's not that funny, or vice versa? Like, does that
all
happen?
The time? That's all we do. Well, I mean, the thing that's great is in the room, you know, when you're in a writer's room, you really are not supposed to crap on anybody else's stuff. It's a rule, and it's a good rule. You should not let the showrunner decide what's funny or not, or what goes in or not. You should not ever police someone else's pitch, really. I mean, that's my opinion. Because you're trying to support each other and build, you know, push a rock up a hill together. So just don't do that. However, Mike and I have over 10 years now being writing partners. Like, we have the shorthand where we can be like, I just really don't like that. That is really stupid. You know, like, so that's kind of a really nice dynamic to have with a writing partner, is that you don't like, you don't have to worry about hurting each other's feelings. He can just be like, Dev, I just really don't like that at all. And I can be like, you are wrong, sir. And so we can actually like argue in a nice way, which I think you don't really, I don't think you should do that necessarily in a big writer's room where people don't always know each other that well. It's almost like a sibling. Like, you can fight with your sibling, but you shouldn't fight with strangers on the street.
Yeah. Have you ever had a job punching up somebody else's script?
That's a great question. No, we've never done just a punch up. We do a lot of punch passes on. Wait, have we done that? Hold on a second.
My friend just punched up the new Paw Patrol and she was showing me.
Oh, awesome.
So funny.
Hey, that actually had a lot of funny stuff in it. My kids really, really liked it. It was funny. That sounds like it'd be a fun job.
Yeah, but I'm like, oh, yeah, I forget that. But like 10 comedians punched it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, none of them get credit. But I remember, like, I was like, what are you doing? She's like, punching up Paw Patrol. I was like, what?
It is interesting because I've had, even in the commercial world, I've had kind of more like branded content stuff where we have a script, either like I wrote or someone else wrote, and they're like, oh, we're just going to have someone punch it up. I'm like, it can't really get funnier than this. And then you get it back, you're like,
this is funnier. This is like next level. How'd
you come up with all these zingers? And
yeah.
Do you think it's just like a muscle you exercise and you just have a good instinct for pop culture references? Or like, what is the secret to like make something funnier? Like, why can some people punch up a script and other people can't? Is that a
Take it away, Carlin.
I'm like, I don't know.
No, some people are really good at it. And then you just also get in that zone. Like, it's like a weird zone you're in. That's why people do drugs, by the way. That's why people do cocaine or caffeine or whatever, because they want to get themselves in that like Close confident day. Place where they can just pitch crazy shit and not care.
I also think, just like anything, it's about, trying 10 different things until the best. And sometimes the best one's the first one, sometimes the best one's the 20th, you know what I mean? But I think it's also just having the confidence to like keep pushing through the ideas, because when you find one that's really funny, you'll know. You're like, oh, that's fucking
very
funny.
True. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's why I like parody so much. I honestly like, when I have kind of a vivid memory of like kind of getting into that zone from with you, Devin, when we were at Take 180, we started doing all these parodies of like Twilight and things. And we knew that Twilight was going to be this huge movie, and we saw the trailer. I think the movie, I don't know if the movie was even out yet, but somehow we knew that it was going to, like, the book had been huge. And we knew the
movie
was going
to be huge. Boy, and, you were right.
And we saw the trailer and it was so dumb and like melodramatic, and we were like, what if we do the Twilight Before Christmas? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And we had Sean, who's a director there, also played Santa Claus, and Devin played...
He was a really, really good Santa.
Yeah, and Devin played Kristen Stewart, Belle. Mm-hmm. Bella, what's her name?
I don't know, but I love her.
Bella.
I think it's Bella.
And we just like, like at the second the title came out, it was like 30 jokes pitched, Like, say your name. And all we would do is take the dialogue from the trailer and just change like four words in it. And I think Devin did this thing where with your face, like with you were doing like this Kristen Stewart impression where you're just like trying to look so disinterested in everything. Or I don't know even how to describe it, but I guess I just kind of remember that as like just off the title, we have like 100 jokes coming. Like, some people can do that even if without the title, and even if with just kind of like a not as obvious a premise.
Right.
I'm always just really impressed by those people that are like, here's 10 alt lines for this line of dialogue you gave us.
We had in TV, and this happens in some sitcoms and stuff, there's an entire joke room. Like, there's a room that does, it's only happened once that I know of on one show that we worked on, but they were the joke room, and they would do punch passes, and they would, like, the showrunner would circle areas. I mean, this was like a multi-cam sitcom. So you would circle areas that didn't do great at the run through or whatever. And then the joke room would just go and like focus on those areas. And certain people just really, really are really good at that.
Yeah. I wonder if there's like, kind of when you're starting out in your career, let's say you are a filmmaker and you're trying to, you want to make a comedy and you have like something that's like pretty funny and you're excited about it and it's about something personal that happened to you. Like, I wonder if there is like a service or some way you can like get your script punched up, by someone that's like really funny. That seems like a a service that could never actually exist, but would be so valuable.
But why? Why? That sounds great.
Because you
go on Shark Tank. That's $1 million idea.
Because I think if you're listening to this podcast and you hear you talking about this room where it's like literally we have this room where people are breaking stories, this showrunner that's telling you what's good or not, these people who make jokes funny, like, of course it's going to be good. Like, how are you going to compete with that? You know, when you're just like sitting by yourself, you know, you're 22, you don't know if something's funny or not.
Yeah, but then you should give it to your friends who are funny and just have them do a punch pass for you. And you circle, you know, like we did that. Mike and I had a pilot that we were working on and there were two really good, really funny guys that we were working with on a show. And we asked them to do a punch pass for us. Then we were going to hire them if we sold it. Then we didn't sell it. So sorry. That's a whole other story.
Hollywood, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you do that, Carlin? Do you have people like help you like on your script?
Not really. I mean, on some commercials that I've done, I've hired, you know, being at College Humor and stuff for a while, like I'm like writing a feature, well, when I have time, but a feature with the writer actor who's at College Humor, and sometimes she'll help me with stuff, but no, normally I just punch it up myself. But like the stuff that I'm writing is comedy, but it's not like broad Melissa McCarthy vehicles. It's not like that kind of comedy. It's a little more grounded, so real like character
more like the
comedy.
Juno.
It's funnier than Juno. But
Do a pass where you call every other character's home skillet.
There you go.
And then circle back.
Yeah. I don't know.
I guess I remember that movie as being funny, but
it is funny. It's like dry.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah.
I mean, the opening scene is like her and Rainn Wilson just like, you know, talking in some sort of rhythmic barbs. Yeah.
Better rewatch it.
Well, Devin, if you were to give yourself advice, like 15 years ago, Devin, what advice would you give to that person to help her be the person that gets the TV writing jobs and the jobs for Netflix as opposed to the person that ends up going to work?
Well, I had something I would always want to tell younger women and my younger self. But I don't know how politically correct this is. And I don't know if times have changed. But one thing I would have said was dress like a man. And I mean that in all sincerity. Don't show your boobs, not even the outline of them. Button up your shirt all the way to the top and try to look as close to male as possible. That was back in the day, though, before, like, because my dream was always to work in late night. Not anymore because I can't. But that was my dream in the early, you know, 2000s-ish. And I didn't realize that I had no chance, not a fucking chance at all to do that because women were just not, they were a distraction. They just weren't allowed. So I wish that when I was trying to do that, I also didn't at the same time think that being sexy was my only currency as a woman that like, so I was very like, what should I do? What lane should I be in? I want to be hot, of course. Cause that's, I mean, isn't that everyone's dream in life who's a woman? So I was like trying to kind of dress hot. Cause I thought that was a good idea. And then I was all, but then it was confusing.
Well,
I think
you were always
like,
wearing high heels in the office. What? You were always wearing high heels in the office. Now I
no, I wasn't, Oren. Come on. No, but yeah. So it's like, you know, that's, I wish that when I was really, cause you know, if I'm giving myself from now the same advice from the same era when I was young, it would have been to dress like a man. I know.
No,
I don't know. Are people going to send emails? I don't fucking know what's happened. Is this,
I mean,
you know, I don't know what era.
I'm 33, and I think intuitively in the beginning of my career, I dressed pretty androgynous just because I just knew, you know what I mean? Like if you were a threat to someone's like, if someone's like wife or something, an exec like saw you and you were a threat, it was just distracting. And it's not, I don't know. I hope it's changing. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, like I'm also a director, Devin, and I remember graduating from film school even 10 plus years ago, maybe I'm older. Okay. Whenever that was, and thinking like, I'm a fucking idiot for thinking I can be a director. There are no women directors. There are like three, But it has changed in the past couple years, truly.
Right. It has. Right. In the past couple years. Yeah, too. And that's what I thought. I went to film school because I thought I wanted to be a director too. Mm-hmm. And then you realize there's no, and that's when people start bringing into the conversation that representation matters, because if you don't see anyone like you in the world, you don't think you can do it.
Right.
Because it hasn't been done.
Just an aside, when I did move to LA, Oren was a huge advocate for me and did send my reel around and help me more than truly anyone in the business. I'm like, part of the reason I'm working today is for Oren. And that's true. Like, I just thank you, Oren. My recommendation, my unpaid endorsement is to be friends with Oren Kaplan. But,
I would say you're welcome, but you're not, like, I don't send reels to people as like favors. I thought your work was really good. And I thought Devin is like one of the funniest people I've ever met. And I remember, like, you know, when we worked together, like, we would fight like that, like siblings. And I like love that. And I've worked at places where people don't care about their work, and that I, you know, do not like that. And so, you're welcome. I appreciate that you appreciate it, but I just sent your stuff because I thought I mean, from the first time you came on our podcast and told us that story about your short film that you made based on your nephew or niece or whatever, I was like, oh man, this person's like a genius. So
I want to see people, can we see it, Carlin? Where can people see that?
I know what you're talking about.
For her first film project, she like interviewed her niece about, I don't know, inappropriate sex. Things. Yeah. Oh. but then, you know, found like something. It's hard to find new things to say, especially like, I was telling Carlin earlier, Devin, that I feel like we kind of like invented like influencer marketing in a way. We like hired these YouTubers to be in our shows.
We did do that.
I was like, how dare you? Here I am directing influencers because of you two.
Yeah, and we also like started the like really bad viral videos, like the green instead of like the big budget stuff, like the YouTube.
I do, but I love that. That's charming.
Definitely. YouTube had just come out. To be fair to us, we were like, "What's this? Should we put it on YouTube?"
Yeah, but so back then it was like kind of easy to do things no one has done before because no one like respected YouTube or whatever. But today I feel like it's really hard to find, you know, something that no one has done, you know, mm-hmm. like you try to make a joke on Twitter and a bazillion people have already made it. So,
I know. It's tough.
So I, you know, whenever I meet someone that's like, has some kind of cool angle, I like to tell other people about them. And luckily I get a lot of people ask me for recommendations. So it's great when I have someone, cause I really don't like recommending people that I don't think are good at what they do or ready, you know, for the job. So. You made it easy. Okay, cool. Well, Devin, I know it's late, but do you mind joining us for an unpaid endorsement?
Not at all. I want to do that. Can I? I have to plug my computer in. That's how long we talked.
Unpaid endorsements.
I have two things. I'll start with the dumb one, which is I went to Trader Joe's the other day, and they have these new potato chips for Thanksgiving.
Oh my
that are
God.
Like stuffing flavored.
Oren like, loves Trader Joe's, like the dumbest snacks at Trader Joe's. Oren buys them all.
Well, so first I was going to get these rice mochi crackers or whatever that are
to be fair,
so
delicious.
Insanely spicy. They had a really spicy version that like when I eat it, it's like depressing for a second. And I'm like, I literally like start walking to the trash can to throw the bag away. Then I'm like, I'll take one more. And then I put them back in the pantry. But if you like really spicy things that aren't that good but are really spicy, you should check out those spicy mochi rice nuggets. But these potato chips, this woman saw and I started talking about these mochi nuggets, and she's like, you must try. Like, if you like Thanksgiving at all, like, it would be offensive if you did not buy these potato chips.
They're potato, but they taste like
potato
stuffing,
chips.
Which
taste
is
like
a wheat,
stuffing. Yeah.
Sort of a bready product.
Yeah. Does that mean you can't eat it?
No, well, I make gluten-free stuffing every Thanksgiving, and it is good. And I swear to God, I know people say this all the time. You cannot tell it's gluten-free. And that's a promise.
Yeah, no. I mean, for those that don't know,
in a week,
because it's made with dry, crusty bread.
Yeah,
that's why.
I mean,
that's
the
what
best,
stuffing is.
By far, the best pancake mix I've ever had is the gluten-free pumpkin mix at
Trader Joe's.
Yeah, also, how do we guess?
And I gotta say, have you been to a different grocery store ever?
No, I've been to Costco. But I remember Devin, when we used to work together, she was like famous for being gluten-free. And there's famous, this gluten-free granola.
She's a trendsetter.
Yeah, exactly.
The gluten-free granola from Trader Joe's is like the best granola they have. And then you would always get mad at other people for eating it because it was like the gluten-free food. But we're like, it's so good. Like,
that sounds
like
me. We
have to eat it.
You don't have gluten in granola. That's crazy. Shouldn't have gluten anyways.
Anyway,
I owe you a huge apology.
Thank you. That can be your endorsement. My other endorsement is just to have like a good microphone. If you're a filmmaker and all, it's just so valuable to have. Like our mics are like Audio Technica AT2020s. They're like $90 or something on Amazon. And I can't tell you, like, pretty much once a week I record temp VO where I do, you know, I use a good mic for something. Obviously I use it for the podcast, I use it for Zoom calls, I use it for everything. And I think like investing in like a halfway decent microphone is like is really smart, especially if you edit, if you work in film or anything. So you should get a good mic. Okay, Carlin, you got anything?
Yeah, I have a real like basic white girl recommendation. That's not true. Sort of like white girl on the east side of a major city. The new Sally Rooney novel, Beautiful World, Where Are You? I just devoured it.
I read Normal People recently. So I was good. Way behind on that, and I truly blazed through it too.
Yeah,
it's she's
an incredible
beautiful.
Writer. Like, yeah,
I talk about like how do you come up with stuff. I would dog ear the pages. Like I can't believe I just fucking read that sentence. That someone captured something so beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's an awesome like writer. One. Oh, I'm good. Oh, good. Okay.
It's good. It's really good. It's interesting that she's
is it a
now
similar reading. Genre.
Yes. That's what's kind of, and she has another book called Conversations with Friends, which I also love, but they're all kind of like about women and complicated relationships around 30 in Dublin. And I keep thinking like, surely I'm going to tire of this. And I don't. And because her writing is just exquisite. And this novel in particular is about, again, like two women in sort of complicated relationship with these two men. But it's a little bit cynical in a way that feels authentic because it's kind of like their experiences are filtered through what we're going through right now, like our planet and the pandemic and everything. And it's just kind of, God, it's just gorgeous, her writing. And it, yeah. Yeah, I
excellent.
Love it.
Excellent. I am going awesome. To read that.
And if you haven't seen Normal People on Hulu, it's incredible.
It's a really good adaptation. I remember thinking, how the fuck are they going to adapt this? And they did. It was crazy.
They really did.
They really did.
Devin, you got anything?
Yes. All my stuff sounds really preachy. I recommend sunscreen.
Uh-huh. That's an Oren Kaplan recommendation if I've ever heard one. And I love it.
I just really think every human should wear it. You just should. But then just don't drink alcohol.
I don't think
people should drink alcohol. I'm sorry. It's going to fucking ruin your life. I think it ruins people's lives.
Tim drinks alcohol. Your anonymous husband.
The Hubs drinks alcohol. He's like literally the only person I know who can have a few drinks and still not be an alcoholic.
That's me. I can have like one glass of wine every.
You can? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll relax my unendorsement. Yeah, it would truly kill me. I don't know. I just feel like it ruins a lot of lives.
But you know, this is called unpaid endorsements, right?
Yeah, I'm just mixing it up. I'm mixing it up. I don't know. I just started thinking about what do I want to tell the world? Don't drink alcohol.
Well, Devin, thanks so much for joining us. And Carlin,
thank you both.
Stepping in for Matt. You'll need to meet Matt one of these days, Devin, I think.
I really want to. That would be fun.
Lovely.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Cool.
If people want to find out
so much.
More about you. Do you, I mean, there's Just Like a TV Mom on Instagram. Anywhere mm-hmm. else people can see what
I,
the real Devin Kelly's doing?
I started another Instagram called Diaper Paparazzi. If people want to send me, I actually need more people to send me stuff because it's all pictures that people's kids take of them on their own phone, which is always, you always look like shit and you always instantly delete it. And I just want to make a whole page of just that.
That's
I
funny.
Want people to stop deleting those photos and send them.
Wait, is it the photo the kid takes themselves or they take
no,
a view?
No, of you. Kids take, your kids take photos of you that are some of the least flattering. Pantsless, you're on the toilet, all of a sudden your kid appears with your phone in your face taking your picture when you're asleep, all that stuff. And it's
no
the stuff
idea
where,
why
oh,
you
it's
don't
the
get
whole world. I do. I have gotten, a good, yeah. Why wouldn't them?
Pantsless, double chin photos.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. Why would someone delete that instead of sending it to the world?
To a stranger on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't know about me. I don't blog or anything, or I don't know. Blog. You mean about finding out?
That's it. Just check her out on IMDb.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
IMDb
that's
Pro
it.
If you're really serious about what you do.
Yeah, if you care about your craft.
Buy a mic, pay $150 a year for IMDb Pro.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, thank you guys so much. This was really fun.
Yeah.
This episode was edited by Sarah Weirda. The outro music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.